Hello, everyone. Before I start this episode, I just wanted to let you know that we are going to be offering our next two-day couples workshop on Thursday and Friday, March 30th and 31st. Again, that's Thursday and Friday, March 30th and 31st. And if you're interested in the workshop, you can get more information at helpingcouplesheal.com or email support at helpingcouplesheal. We are actually going to be spending this episode coming up right now talking about the benefits and value of doing a couples intensive or a couples workshop. And for those of you who might be in an area of the world where you do not have access to local resources, this online workshop could be a good option for you. Again, if you're interested, email support at helpingcouplesheal.com, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, a place for healing and hope for couples impacted by betrayal resulting from infidelity and or sex addiction. Your host is Marnie Breaker, licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sex addiction therapist, and founder of the Center for Relational Healing in Los Angeles and San Diego, California. The Helping Couples Heal podcast was launched in 2021 with the intention of bringing hope to couples all over the world who are desperately trying to recover from the devastating impact of betrayal. Realizing how many people the podcast was reaching and that we could offer even more support to our listeners, Marnie co-founded Helping Couples Heal, which has since grown into a global online coaching organization. This podcast is the foundation of all the work that we do at Helping Couples Heal. Thank you for listening. Marnie brings over a decade of experience and expertise in the field of betrayal trauma and is honored to support you wherever you may be in your healing. If you've lost hope, you've come to the right place. Now, take a slow, deep breath, and let's begin with the Helping Couples Heal podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Helping Couples Heal podcast. This is Marnie, and today I am excited to introduce a colleague and fellow CSAT with you all. We're going to be talking about a topic that I talk about a lot on this podcast, which is psychological abuse and gaslighting. And my colleague, Dr. Kevin Skinner, has done quite a bit of research on the topic. He also has his own podcast, and he and I share a lot of the same ideas and approaches about how to look at betrayal trauma and abuse. So, Dr. Skinner, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Marnie, it's so good to be with you.
I'm so happy you're here. I told you before we started recording that I was recently listening to one of the episodes of your podcast and was really, I'm not going to say astounded, but a little bit surprised and very happy to hear that you see and acknowledge and recognize the abusive dynamics that often occur in the context of relationships that are traumatized by betrayal. A lot of professionals, for whatever reasons, do not often like to talk about abuse and use that word. So I thought, I'm so happy I have sort of an ally on the ground here.
You know, it's interesting. So let me give you a little bit of background of how this all started. So back in about 2002, 2003, I started seeing clients coming to my office just angry. Betrayal was the core reason that they were coming, but the anger was just off the charts high. And I started listening to their stories. And I realized that by 2004, 2005, there wasn't a lot talking about infidelity and sexual betrayal. And so I was kind of lost myself. I just got my PhD and I'm like, what helps these individuals? What's even the right diagnosis? And I bumped into a friend and she said, I think they're experiencing PTSD symptoms. And, you know, at the time, this is early 2000s, a lot of people are thinking PTSD is war, right? People who've been to war. And, you know, obviously over the last 20 years, we've kind of grown up and learned so much more about, okay, you can trigger PTSD from a myriad of things. And so together we put together an assessment that assessed post-traumatic stress symptoms and linked it to infidelity. And in 2019, so it took me about 15 years to publish this, but I now have a published article that shows the relationship between PTSD symptoms and infidelity and sexual betrayal. But it's interesting because as we started gathering data, this is 2005, 2006, people were taking this assessment and I didn't even know where they were coming from because I just put it online and people started taking it. Next thing I know, I've got like 300 people who've completed this survey.
Wow.
And as I started looking at the data, I started asking myself the question, what is it that's actually triggering this kind of PTSD symptoms? And at the time, I was a researcher and I started listening to the stories. I wonder about blame and denial, because that's what I started seeing. People were being blamed for their partner's sexual betrayal. And then there was so much denial, like, no, I didn't do that. Or it was a minimization. Or it was just a hug. It was just a kiss. No, well, it actually ended up being three affairs. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I put into that at the time, and I had no idea what I was doing other than observing what I was hearing my clients say. And I created what's called a denial and blame scale. So then I'm being trained to become a certified sex addiction therapist. And I hear the term gaslighting. And as they started describing it, I'm like, what in the freak? I actually have a scale for this.
Wow.
And that's actually the story. So that's 2013. So I went and like, I'm really curious now. So I started looking at the data and I was absolutely stunned at the higher the level of denial and blame, the higher the PTSD symptoms were.
So that is exactly why I see so many situations where the person who's been acting out, the betrayer or the sex addict, has stopped the behavior. They're sober, and yet the partner continues to be traumatized and in a high state of anxiety and activation. And there's a lot of confusion around what's going on. Why is he or she still so traumatized when the person has stopped the behavior? And it's because oftentimes we see the continuation of the denial and blame, even in the, you know, so-called recovery.
And in truth, the gaslighting in many instances is not being addressed. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a book and published it last year, Rebuild Your Relationship After Sexual Betrayal. And I have an entire chapter in there titled Gaslighting No More. And the reason why is because I'm going to go back to the research for a second. So I also incorporated into my assessment the adverse childhood experiences. And so if I said, Marnie, okay, if we took childhood experiences and there's 10 items, the higher your score of ACEs, the more likely you have physical and mental health challenges. And if we take the denial and the blame, the deception, the gaslighting, which of those would you think would trigger more PTSD symptoms, adverse childhood experiences or the gaslighting?
So I think that most people would probably think the first, the adverse childhood experiences. I would say with what I have observed in my own career, that it would be the gaslighting, the denial and blame.
And that's the question that I was curious about, right? So of these.
Am I right?
Well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
And to your listeners, right? They're both significant. Right. So adverse childhood experiences does influence the higher levels of PTSD. Now, the correlation, sorry, I'm going to be a little bit geeky here if I was a statistician. It's about a 0.17 to 0.2 relationship. It's okay. And it is significant. But when you start looking at the gaslighting, the denial and the blame, you're talking about correlations that go into the 3.5 to 3.9 to 4.2.
Wow.
And so very strong relationship between gaslighting and PTSD symptoms. In fact, up to this point in my career, over the last 15 years, I can't find anything higher that is statistically relevant. So if we don't address the gaslighting that's occurred in the relationship, I'm not sure we're going to help the relationship heal.
I'm with you 100%. I say that all the time. I talk about how getting into recovery and getting sober, while that's challenging and that's really important, it's like the prerequisite to even try to heal the relationship. But that's the beginning. There is so much more, these deeper dynamics of perpetration, abuse, that have been occurring and sometimes continue to occur if they're not being called out and addressed. And if professionals are scared to use the term abuse and they won't call it out because they're afraid maybe that they're going to trigger the person's shame or they're going to, you know, make them feel horrible and it's not the right thing, I'm thinking it's such a disservice because they're allowing this pattern to continue. And that's not going to serve the person or the partner or the relationship.
Definitely not. And more important to me is in the ignoring of it, then we don't have a mechanism to help the betrayed partner heal.
Right.
How do you regain trust when I looked you in the eyes? This is one of the questions. My partner looked me in the eye and lied to me.
Yeah.
If I just take that one question, because what do they say? The eyes are the window into the soul. And if I looked at you and I lied to you, then what is my mechanism to say, okay, I'm looking at you. I no longer know how to read you. What do you want to call that? Whether you call that abuse or not, which in my mind, that kind of deceptiveness, It is a emotional form of, or a psychological form of abuse.
Yeah, it's manipulating another person's reality.
So if we were to define psychological abuse, it is the manipulating another person for your benefit. Again, research has shown me over and over again, if I ignore that, I guess I'm not going to help my clients.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I started to really study abuse and the dynamics of abuse that are occurring in the context of betrayal trauma, I had to go through a period where I needed to do a lot of work with myself about how am I going to be able to talk about this with other people. The last thing I want to do is shame people, make them feel bad, use language that's going to be harmful. But what I realized as I grew as a professional, I became more confident and I talked about it more. Kevin, what I realized was that the people out there, they needed and wanted and were longing and desperate for this information.
It's how you make amends. It's how you heal a relationship. It's actually how you get into your own recovery by stopping the deceptiveness, the lying, the hidden behaviors. And when you own those, that's where couples heal. One of my favorite researchers, Peggy Vaughn, many years ago, she did work with 1,000 betrayed partners, and she looked at what successful couples do. She looked at couples who made it, couples who didn't make it. And the couples who were talking about the details, answering questions, they were way more likely to stay together. And included in that is, yeah, I did lie about this. I did hide this behavior. I did minimize this. And owning that and acknowledging that is a powerful way to make amends.
Yeah, I think that there's no hope for healing when the person who has caused all of this, or the secret keeper, the betrayer, whatever you want to say, is continuing to minimize. They might even be acknowledging what they did. They might say, yeah, I had 3 affairs, right? But when they're denying the impact of it on the partner, like you said, when they're minimizing the partner's experience, that is going to, in my opinion, cause more trauma. We're not going to see a reduction of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. We are going to see an increase.
Yeah.
And you know, that person is not getting the recognition that they need in order to heal. It is such a, to me, whether or not the relationship heals, I think the most loving, kind thing that a betrayer can do for the betrayed partner is to give them the truth and give them back their reality. And like you said, part of that reality could be, I looked you in the eyes and I lied to you. I did do that.
Yeah. And that acknowledgement speaks to, I want to repair this. It's not just that I'm doing it. It speaks more that I'm willing to repair the damage that I did. And so that's one of the reasons why we do disclosures. That's one of the reasons why we do an impact letter from the betrayed saying, this is how your actions hurt me. I often will incorporate some of the gaslighting into that part of it. When this was happening, I didn't know who to trust. And I still am struggling to repair this because I don't trust you because you lied to me by doing it this way. Then in the third part of this, the emotional restitution followed by, I want to acknowledge that I did lie to you that way. And I did manipulate. I did hide the money. I didn't tell you the truth in the beginning. Those things, I'm telling you, betrayed partners over and over say, I just want the truth. I just need the truth.
I think this is why I personally am curious if you've experienced this too. I have seen a bit more healing at this stage, at this time in my career, than I did when I first came in. I came into the field, I believe after you, but it was probably about 2006 or so. And what I was seeing is the conflict and the struggles and the relational trauma was just off the charts. I wasn't seeing a lot of success stories. But I also, when I look back now, I think that the focus was so much on the sexual acting out, the sex addiction. Let's just do the task work. Let's talk about relapse prevention. Let's teach you about cognitive distortions and secrets and lies and do a disclosure. But there was this huge piece that was missing, which we're talking about now. And while I think that we still have a long way to go in our field and with teaching other professionals to talk about these patterns of psychological manipulation and gaslighting, I do see that now that there are some of us doing that work, it's helping. Like I really, really do see, and I'm curious about you. Do you see a difference today in the couple's recovery more than you did years ago?
Yeah, because I think we have a better template. I think early on it was, yeah, we do a disclosure. I own this. But when you ignore the emotional manipulation, again, when you ignore the gaslighting, you're going to bump into people who stay stuck. They don't resolve because the truth, the acknowledgement of the lies, it's like people will say something like, I thought I knew it all, and now I'm waiting for the other shoe to fall. I'm waiting for more because there was a, what we typically call a staggered disclosure. I get a little bit here, I get a little bit there, I get a little bit there. And when you get a little bit, that is a form of gaslighting. It is the hidden behavior that prevents the healing completely. So that's one of the reasons why, if you're going to do a disclosure, do it completely. Get the complete truth out there, because a staggered disclosure, that's another part of the research. Staggered disclosures is a part of gaslighting. It wreaks havoc on the relationship.
Oh, it makes repair so much harder, because when the person is looking at their partner and saying, this is it, yes, I'm going to give you this piece of information and this is everything, now you have it all. And then 2 days later, 2 weeks later, a year later, the partner discovers something else. And now the betrayer is saying, okay, yes, I didn't tell you this, but this is it. This is everything. And the partner's like, how do you expect me to believe that? How am I? And they're like, but I'm telling you the truth. Okay, but you told me that you were telling me the truth a year ago.
Exactly. And that's one of the core things that keep people stuck, is doing it half-baked, half the story, which again, that's a gaslighting behavior. And I've often asked the question. In fact, I run some online groups just to keep myself talking with people and getting aware. And it's amazing to me how many times I hear statements like, this staggered, this trickle down, I get a little bit here, a little bit there. I don't know what to trust anymore.
It's so heartbreaking to see partners experience that. And then what I see beyond that is, not only do I not know what to trust in terms of what my partner's telling me, but I don't even trust myself, because I believed that what they had said to me was true. I did believe it a year ago when they said, you know everything. And I actually started to trust, and I've been healing, and we've actually been doing well. And this has, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I can do this again. I don't know if I have another one in me here.
Yeah. And that's where we see coupleships at a brink. And that's when I often will incorporate, when there's been a lot of gaslighting and significant gaslighting, and they say, hey, this is it. This is officially it. Finally, I've said, well, let's go do a polygraph. Let's go use iDetect. I don't know if you're familiar with the iDetect.
I am, but share it, because the listeners might not know.
So iDetect, I was actually trained in it a few years ago, but it's a lot like a polygraph, but people don't realize this, but your retina actually gets bigger if you're lying. Now, it's imperceptible to me and you. We won't see it with our natural eye, but a computer that is very good at detecting size. It was really interesting. I was being trained for this, and they said, okay, so we're going to teach you how to do this, and you're going to do it on yourself. And so we want you to choose a number between 1 and 10. I think my number was 4. And so when you get to 4, it say your number was not 4, and you were told to lie on your number. And so when we were done with this whole thing, you go through it 4 times. When we were done, it said, your number is 4. And I'm like, how did this machine know that my number was 4? And it's because I was told that you have to lie when it said my number was not 4. And I would say, well, my number was 4, right? Or it wasn't 4. And it was fascinating to me. This machine told me my number.
Wow.
So I say this because when a person has a chronic history of gaslighting, the power of saying this is it, being validated by something like that, it can create a foundation. Now, people have said, well, yeah, but you can lie in a polygraph and you can lie in that. But 86 to 87% of the time, it's accurate. In truth, I would take 85 to 86% or 90% over guessing. And so there's times where I say, because of chronic gaslighting, if you're willing to do that, and I've seen people say, I'll do it every 6 months. Whatever you need, because I want to repair this, I will do that, because our relationship is that important to me.
I agree 100%. And I think that when the betrayer is unwilling to do the polygraph, what I believe is that's ongoing gaslighting, because they're continuing to deny. When they say something like, why don't you believe me? I've been sober for a year. Or why do you need a polygraph? Or any of those kind of things. Again, it's sort of saying to the partner, why do you need that? That's kind of crazy. But yet the partner's thinking, wait, what do you mean it's kind of crazy? I found out our whole marriage, you were seeing prostitutes and having affairs and living a whole secret life that I never knew about.
What's the price you're willing to pay to heal?
Right. It's the relationships where I see the willingness. Yes, I'll do a polygraph. I'll do a polygraph. I know that I'm being honest, but I want to show you, and it makes perfect sense to me that you want to ask for a polygraph. You feel crazy for asking for a polygraph. Like you keep saying, I can't believe I need to ask for a polygraph from my partner I'm supposed to trust. But you know what? Of course you do, because I lied to you for years. Let me give that to you. Let me provide you with some comfort and some peace, and let me help you get your own intuition back. Let me help you restore your reality.
Again, another way of making amends. I'm willing to do whatever it takes, because our relationship is that important to me.
So, Kevin, a lot of times when we have engaged in abusive behavior, particularly gaslighting, let's stick with gaslighting, it's hard for us to admit it because it's a horrible thing when someone calls you bad and they tell you really what you've done and the harmful impact that it's had on someone, especially someone you love. That's hard to take. And especially for addicts who have a strong shame core to begin with and have a difficult time dealing with negative emotions and difficult situations. And when they hear this term gaslighting, I think some people are able to say, yes, that's me. I've done it. You know, yep, I get it. Other people, I think, want to continue to deny or minimize. And sometimes I think it's because they don't fully understand. You know, they hear the term, it's the psychological manipulation and the deception, the manipulation of someone's reality, but they don't necessarily understand what it looks like in practical terms. So can you share some specific examples of what gaslighting might look like in the context of betrayal?
Yeah. So we live in a culture where I think maybe 2 years ago, the word of the year was gaslighting.
Yes.
So I think in some ways there's a problem with that because once a term gets used, it can be used in so many contexts that it becomes misused. So if I were to look specifically at the behaviors as it relates to your behavior in the relationship, specific things, we already talked about one, looking you in the eyes and lying to you. No, I didn't do that. Denial. That's one version, right? I can add to the denial. Oh, you know, it was just a hug when in reality it was multiple affairs. That's gaslighting because I led you to think one thing when in reality it was another thing. So a lie is any communication given with the intent to deceive. Gaslighting is that. Yeah. And then the other part of this is blame. Right. So we've talked a lot about the denial. If I add to this, the blame, you know, you're making this worse than it really is. It's not that big of a deal. By the way, everybody's doing this. So I don't understand why you're making such a big deal of this. Or I wouldn't have done what I did if you would have.
Right.
And so when I start blaming you, you know, I think you're having some mental health challenges because I know your dad wasn't faithful to your mom, but why in the world do you, I think you're just projecting onto me what your dad did. And when you hear statements like that, now that kind of blame, and I'm going to tell you, the higher the blame score, and this is something interesting from the research, the higher the blame score, the higher the probability that other forms of abuse are happening in the relationship.
Interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
To me, it did, right? So if you're blaming, you're the victim of your spouse, and you will find a way to blame them for your actions. It's not taking any form of accountability. So the higher the levels of blame, we see higher levels of emotional, verbal abuse.
You know, I was just thinking that blame, it's so childlike. When we are triggered by our early experiences, those early adverse experiences, we do regress into other ego states, and one can often be like a child, and blaming is something kids do. I was literally driving my son to school this morning. He's 6 years old, and he started blaming me in the car because I didn't remind him to go wake up our friend who's staying here for a few days. He wanted to see her in the morning, and he had said he was going to do that, and then he got busy with breakfast and getting ready, and we got in the car, and he got so mad at me because I didn't make him do it. And I was explaining to him that he was blaming. I'm trying to tell a six-year-old about taking responsibility, but that's a whole other story. My point is that it's very normal and age-appropriate for my son to do that, right? Like, that makes sense. So if we look at this as adults blaming their partner, it really is because there is a lot of emotional maturity when we're dealing with people that are engaging in these behaviors.
And if you look at the research, I'm going to refer to this as a shame-based behavior. Because if you look at shame itself, it often encapsulates, I don't want to be seen. It's not me. And so when we find people in high levels of shame, we see anger and rage and pushing the responsibility elsewhere because I don't want the spotlight on me. And that's really what you just described in that scenario. I feel bad that I didn't do it, but it's your fault. You didn't tell me to do that, Mom. In truth, when a person has acted out, they deflect that away. If you wouldn't have, then I wouldn't have. It's your fault.
Yep. So there's another example that I want to share that I remember from years ago, a client was sharing with me. So when she and her husband, when their daughter was turning one, they were planning the first birthday party. And her husband ended up saying that he couldn't be there. He had to go on a business trip. And she was devastated by that. And she said, "What do you mean? It's our daughter's first birthday. How can you possibly go on a business trip?" And he got so angry and basically was saying, how could you make me feel bad? I feel bad enough. I'm the one missing it. I don't want to go work. I'm always working. I'm the one who's working all the time. I work so hard for this family. And she ended up feeling horrible. She felt so bad and apologized to him, only to discover years later during disclosure that she was right. Well, sorry, she didn't know that he was having an affair. He did go and see his acting out partner that weekend, and he disclosed that in disclosure. But then she realized, you made me think that I was accusing you of something, or I was blaming you for something, or making you feel bad. And that was harder for her than to hear all of the details of his acting out.
The timing, right? Because as is true with most situations, betrayed partners try to put timing into the equation so they understand what was happening in our relationship. Because I'm trying to make sense of this story, and it makes no sense. Our child's first birthday, and you're making a big deal, and you turn it around like that. So the repair process there, it's so much more difficult when there's gaslighting, and that's a perfect example. Now, helping that couple, I'm going to assume, is probably pretty difficult.
Yeah. I was actually going to say, this is a great opportunity to talk about, what would you do? How would you help that couple heal?
I'm going to say three things. One is, the person who did that would have to be in a state of recovery and not acting out. They would have to have, I call it an open heart to that change process and acknowledging how I lied and how I deceived, which ultimately came out at that time. But there is an emotion that comes with contrition, and I don't know how else to say that, but it is acknowledging how dark I was at that time, how wrong I was. And that kind of ownership starts the path. It's a continuous process, because you have to be at a point where you have enough empathy for your partner's pain. And if you can't feel your partner's pain and how deceptive that was and how painful that was and the accusation and making her feel that, and if you can't own that, then you're not going to help her, because she's not going to feel understood. Betraying partners frequently tell me, I just want my partner to understand how much pain I'm in because of them.
And what you're saying, it highlights basically why, when the acting out is done, but the person is still not validating the partner's experience, you can't heal. So you just spent quite a bit of time talking about how much denial and blame we see on the part of the person who has done the betrayal. What you're describing now, this healing and repair, cannot occur when there is a dynamic going on of the denial and blame.
It won't happen, especially like, just get over it. Why can't we just move on? Those are the things that, again, I hear that one over and over. Why can't you just forgive me? Why can't we just move on? It's way more than that.
It's way more than that.
It's way more than that. And that's why acknowledging those events or the ways that you blamed or denied or deceived, when you do that, now you're bringing it into the light. And that's where, as painful as it is, my partner won't be able to handle that. I often hear people say, no, not only will they be able to handle it, they will understand that you're finally being truthful with them. Now, it doesn't mean your relationship's going to work out. But what it does mean is that you no longer have to feel like you're hiding anything, and your partner doesn't have to question themselves and the way that you lied. It's just, if you're going to heal, it's necessary, and beyond necessary, it's essential.
Yeah. And further, if you are saying something like, I can't disclose this to my partner because he's not going to be okay, then what you're doing is you're continuing to control their reality.
Right.
Right. Like, you're saying, oh, well, I don't think that they're going to be okay, or I think they're going to react this way, and therefore I'm not going to provide them with the truth. And I've never met a betrayed partner who didn't want the truth. Never. That's what they want. That's what they need. And I actually often think of my job as helping to facilitate that process of helping people essentially have a shared reality again.
Right. I like the way you say that, because now we share this in common, because I finally let you into the secrecy, the hidden behaviors. And again, it takes a lot of work. You asked a question earlier, you know, how do you help these people? It starts with an individual journey of, why am I choosing to lie? Why did I choose that? Let's just change the equation here for a second. People who drink or do drugs, they do very similar things. They hide their behaviors. They minimize it. They have secret behaviors. When that comes out, it's truth. You know, I used to hide the alcohol in the boot or in the top of the closet, or I put it in the trunk of my car, right? And so you start hearing these stories of how I lied and how I deceived. And that's where people are like, I'm starting to see you now and get to know you, because you're being authentic finally.
Exactly. And I think that for an addict, any addict, their biggest fear is being known, because if you know me and if you know my truth and you know what I do and what I've done, you're not going to love me anymore. You're not going to want me anymore. There's that whole shame. To build shame resilience and to actually be in a healthy relationship and have true intimacy with another person, you can't control that, what they know about you, because then you're living your life literally with this narrative in your head of, if only they knew, if they really knew me, they wouldn't love me.
And now that you're bringing it into the light and you're being seen, I can't tell you how confident, and this is a term I often find with my clients, there's a sense of confidence when they are not hiding anything. It's just a beautiful thing to see. So that really means that you have to deal with your shame so you can be authentic. I often say, if you are still in shame, you won't be able to hold your partner's pain.
That is right. I'm actually finishing up creating a course on shame that I've been working on for probably about 6 months. And I've dived really deep into the world of shame. And I've used studied a lot of Brené Brown's research. And what I know to be true now is the only way to build shame resilience, which every addict has to do, or any person who's betrayed their partner and wants to heal, they have to build shame resilience. What's required of them is to be authentic, to actually reach out for help, to ask for support, and to share their truth. And the truth is what they don't want to share, because that's all the shame. And it's an interesting thing to teach clients. You have to do exactly what it is that you not only don't want to do, but that you are terrified to do, that you've spent your whole life finding ways to avoid doing.
Absolutely. What's so fun, though, when people start doing this work, like working on the shame, and when the betrayed partner sees their spouse, partner being genuine, doing a disclosure, sharing those things that they hid and the manipulation, how they lied, they walk out of your office. Sometimes they're holding hands and they haven't done that for years. And that's when you're like, oh, this is good.
That is the best feeling. At Helping Couples Heal, we have an online couples community, and it's all online. But we did in September an in-person retreat, and 16 of the couples actually flew in, and we all met in Louisiana, and we had a couple of days together. And one of the things we did was we actually did like a bowling party, essentially. And I sat back and was watching these couples who I've been observing for years, struggling through trying to heal from betrayal, having fun together, laughing, like you said, holding hands. I saw a few kisses. I look like a kid. If someone looked at me, they'd be like, what are you looking at?
What are you doing at the bowling alley?
Yeah, what are you laughing at and smiling at? I was like a kid at a candy store, because I was seeing what it is that these couples had been desperate for so long. And there I was observing it. Mm. I was observing it. And I share that because what I know is that everyone who's listening right now, that's what they want. That's where they want to get. And you know what? Many want to get there with their partner. They want to have the couple's healing. And I get that. I do want to just say, it doesn't always happen. That piece doesn't always happen. And I don't want to be offering false hope, because that's such an individual journey.
Yeah. But I think it's important what you said there. I think many people want to repair. I think they don't know how to repair.
Right.
And that's one of the things I appreciate about your podcast. You're talking about real difficult topics that need to be addressed. And if we address these things, and if we don't know how to do it, we get professional support, and that game changing what can actually happen.
Absolutely. I know we're having to start to wrap up. I want to take a few minutes to have you share with people where they can find you and what you are offering. And also, I know you've got a conference coming up in March. I'd love for you to share a little bit about that. And we're going to drop the link to the conference in our show notes as well.
Yeah. So a couple things. Here's one of my life goals. It's to put everything that I've learned into a place where people can access it in a way that can help them in their life and their relationships. And part of the reason why is I had a dear friend about 2 years ago. He passed away. He was brilliant. He had so many incredible ideas, and it was all in his computer and a book, and it wasn't accessible for general public. And I thought, I'm not going to go that way. So I decided that I was going to create a website, and my goal is to help people have better intimate relationships. And I'm not talking sex. I'm talking about just being better parents, better in marriage, better at solving problems. And obviously throughout my career, betrayal, trauma, infidelity, helping couples heal. That's one of my core goals. So I created a website called humanintimacy.com. And at my website, I've got assessments for couples that they can take and learn about their relationship. I have groups that I run. And recently I thought, I want to do a conference where I've got leading experts in healing from betrayal, trauma, and infidelity, leading experts in the recovery process, leading experts in helping couples heal. And I've got a host of certified sex addiction therapists that are going to be presenting to help just literally help in this process. So the conference is the first annual Human Intimacy Conference. They can learn more at humanintimacy.com, where it will take them to a place where they can register. It's a two-day conference, March 14th and 15th. The 14th is for individuals in betrayal and individuals in recovery. So it's individual sessions. And then day two is the couple healing.
Oh, I love this.
And it's all recorded, so they'll have access to it. And at the end of every day, we have a Q&A where people can ask their questions and we are answering questions. These are certified sex addiction therapists who are leading thinkers in the field. I've got Michelle Mays presenting. If you're familiar with Michelle's work, phenomenal.
Of course.
With Dr. Sherry Keffer, she's in your neck of the woods. She's going to be presenting. And then we just have some incredible experts on shame resilience on day two, working with couples. And what we're doing is we are committed to providing support. So in advance of that time, I'm asking people to share the questions that they have. So the content's actually going to be based upon the questions that people have. And so I'm going to be sharing that with the experts.
Is that going to be online?
Yeah, it's all virtual. And the reason why is because we have a group of people from all over the country and traveling and everything to get here. So our first one's going to be virtual. We may have the next one in person, but right now I just want to get as much help out there, education as possible as we can.
Well, as I said, I'll definitely put the link to the conference in our show notes, and I will also make sure that I am spreading the word and letting people know. It sounds absolutely wonderful. And as somebody who, you know, like you, my goal really is to help couples heal. I always say my goal is to help humans heal, but I have a bit of a focus on helping couples heal. So hearing that you've got that second day that really focuses in on that, I encourage all my listeners to check it out and will 100% help try to direct more people to attend.
That'd be awesome. And to your listeners, one of the things that I'm really trying to do, I really believe that many couples, they want to heal, but there's so many unresolved things that they don't know how to do, like how to communicate in really difficult times. And so that's one of the core things that we're going to be talking about is how to have difficult conversations when maybe you haven't been able to in the past.
Is the conference open for professionals to attend?
Yeah, professionals can absolutely attend. And if they want to contact me, I can give them a specific entry code. So yes, and they can reach me at Dr. Kevin Skinner at humanintimacy.com.
Wonderful. Kevin, I am so glad that we were able to schedule this. I have lots of guests on the podcast. I always enjoy talking with colleagues and I'm very into collaboration. But I have to say, when it comes to this abuse piece, there's not a ton of people that really sort of speak that language. And I've really enjoyed being able to talk to you and feel confident that you, you know, you're really supportive of and validating of all of what I do. So this has really been a pleasure, and I know that this is going to be very appreciated by our listeners.
Well, thank you. And to your listeners, I just appreciate you taking the time. One thing I want to say about this, I'm a person who's committed to research and what works, and the research supports what we've talked about today. I'm not guessing. If you don't address gaslighting, if you don't address that, the healing process is going to be stymied. And if there's a takeaway today, that's what my hope is, because I want couples to heal, but I don't want to sugarcoat it either. We can't sugarcoat the reality. We have to deal with these things.
Yeah. If you are somebody who has minimized your partner's experience of PTSD, you need to hear that what Dr. Skinner has said is that the research shows a correlation, a big relationship between PTSD symptoms and gaslighting. So if you continue to deny or blame and gaslight and manipulate your partner, what you're doing is you're actually exacerbating their PTSD symptoms. So if you want to help them heal, please do address this psychological piece. Please look at the abuse.
Yeah. One final thought. If we don't address it, I don't think the coupleship can get to a deeper level of intimacy, which most people belong or want to have.
I agree 100%. Thank you for saying that. Thank you again for being here. To all our listeners, thank you as always for your support. And I look forward to seeing you again really soon. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Helping Couples Heal podcast, where your healing is our number one priority. If you'd like additional resources about betrayal trauma or to learn more about our coaching services, please visit helpingcouplesheal.com or call 562-379-4325. Our help is available worldwide. Please support Helping Couples Heal in continuing to reach others impacted by betrayal trauma by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast with someone you care about. For additional support, follow us on Instagram and consider joining our Helping Couples Heal private Facebook community. This isn't an easy journey, but you don't have to do it alone. Once again, thank you for listening.